February 16th, times 140. This today is representing Moses, representing Kelly, representing Foster. Welcome back, co-chairman, representing Chanel, myself, representing Meyer, representing Petula, representing Hawker, and representing Stokes will be joining us here shortly. Today we're going to continue the Fast Track Supplemental, which is House Bill 421. Then we'll from there go on to House Bill 369, which is another supplemental energy related pipeline and miscellaneous. We are not taking up House Bill 150, licensing radiological technicians today. We'll finish that and take that Tuesday next week. So if there's anything to come before the committee before we get started. Say not, I think the only department we had left on the Fast Track was the DOC, Department of Transportation. With us then is Katie Slate.
Yes.
Okay, so if you could get to the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Nancy Slagle, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We will be looking at Sections 9A, B, C, D, E, and F of the bill. Section 9A is our request for $504,200 in general fund dollars for replacement of a jet fan in the Whittier Tunnel. As you're aware, the Whittier Tunnel is a 2.5 mile long dual use facility. At each end of the tunnel are two fans that help to push the carbon monoxide gases through the tunnel so that we can operate it safely. One of those fans on each end is an ongoing operating fan. The other is a backup. One of the fans had a catastrophic failure, which was not anticipated at all. What that means is then we have on one end of the tunnel, we have just one remaining fan. If we need to maintain that fan, if any problems occur with it or whatever, we'd have to shut down the tunnel for that maintenance effort. So this is a safety issue. We're trying to resolve it as quickly as possible. We have ordered the fan and we want to make sure that it's in place before the high traffic area occurs.
Okay, any questions? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 9B reflects the appropriation level of the airport improvement program, which is, we are increasing based on the additional allocations that are identified in C and D. So I'll skip to C, which is the Cordova Runway Safety Area Expansion. This is a Federal Aviation Administration special project. They've provided the funds for us in a grant last August, and we are in the process of advertising for this project right now. What it is the runway safety area is not adequate. It's a deficient. We are, the FAA is looking at this airport and using an engineered materials arresting system, which will allow us to use that instead of widening and lengthening the runway safety areas. It requires construction of these blocks. Equipment is needed to remove the snow from the EMS. That's part of the grant as well as a warranty for the repairs on the system. And we're trying to get that bid out and so that we can get the blocks installed in April. then we can, the airport has to be, we can't have any construction during the fish haul season, which is mid-May to June, and then complete the construction in July in time for the real rainy weather. So this is a kind of a time-sensitive project, and again, as I said, it's a FAA priority.
May I ask a question? Does this require a match?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it does. And we do have adequate match to cover that.
So you have actually run your budget?
We have some flexibility there. When we budget for our match for the airport improvement program, we do it based on what we know our entitlements are going to be and some also for discretionary projects that we may be receiving. We have had a very close relationship with FAA in identifying high priority projects in Alaska. They've been very generous in providing discretionary funds for us, and that we've been able to make sure that we covered that within our match.
Okay, so you're not taking away from another project?
We are not taking away from another, yes. That's right. The other, I believe that's 9D, I'm looking at it right, Unalakleet Airport paving. This is a $12.1 million project. Again, this is a grant that was given to us by the FAA in August. It's a two-year grant basically to pave the runway, taxiway, and apron for the Unalakleet Airport. This airport was originally paved by the military, and there has been some problems with the damage to jet engines because of the degradation of the runway itself. Northern Air Cargo has decided not to fly in there until the runway is repaired. We got this grant in August. We are advertising it right now. We need to continue to get this moving so that we can complete the project within a two-year time frame. The next item, actually 9E, is the appropriation level for 9F, which is an addition to the Surface Transportation Program. It's an increase to our National Highway System non-NHS pavement and bridge refurbishment projects. We have an increased need to go out and do our what we call preventative maintenance program that qualifies under the Federal Highway Administration program. Those types of projects include chip sealing, pavement overlays, milling, profiling, micro-surfacing, seal coats, joint seals, all kinds of repair work on the bridges as well as the road system and drainage systems, guardrails and illuminations types of projects. Those examples of projects that would be funded or partially funded from this increase would include Homer area paving. That would include the Skyline, Mission, and Diamond Ridge roads. In Palmer, it would be pave and trade for the Engstrom Road and Chugach Street. Seward Highway, milepost 37 to 40, reconstruction of the surface and base. In Fairbanks, some ditches and storm drains on 19th Avenue, some work on Tope Cutoff. Steese Expressway, there'd be some reconstruction on the Waring course base and drainage. Some chip seal of 11 miles of road on the Chena Ridge, Chena Pump. Chip seal on the East End Road, Zamobia Highway in Wrangell, and patch and seal in Petersburg, and the Hagen Drive and Sandy Beach Drive, and some pave and trade in the Yakutat area. So there's quite a few projects that are funded through this particular program.
Okay. very good. And I'm assuming a match on that as well.
Yes, that's right, Mr. Chairman. There is match on that, and we do have adequate match to cover that.
Is that 25%? What is that match?
Pardon?
What is our match, 25%?
On these federal highway is less than 10%.
Okay. Question, Mr.
Chairman, are those projects earmarked by the Fed?
Through the chair, Representative Hoffman, no, those are not. Those are projects that the department has determined to be cost beneficial to extend the life of those roads, so that the department identifies those projects, those that are most in need.
Can you elaborate a tad bit on how you determine those were the most in need projects in the state?
We go through an evaluation process, which identifies a great deal of variables associated with each of those projects, and so it's determining what the pavement index is, pavement condition index, what the amount of traffic is in those roads. Just a wide variety, and I can provide, I have at the office, I have the criteria that I can provide those to you for that is used in the evaluation of those projects. I'm glad to provide that to you.
Is that a unilateral decision, or just an executive decision in your shop, or does that ever involve any public input?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, we have a project evaluation committee that reviews that includes the key members of the department, regional directors, the deputy commissioners, the planning chiefs. They all go and review all of those projects in conjunction with the others and to determine what their priority levels are.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you want a copy of her?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the final item is an amendment that we've submitted to this, which is for the Kotzebue Sand Building. This is an old sand storage building at the Kotzebue Airport. It's well over 25 years of age. It's no longer adequate for storing of sand. The constant pushing of sand against the building is causing it to bulge outwards, and it's structurally not safe any longer. We were going to hold off on doing this project, but then found that another project, which was the Nome Airport project, which is emergency repairs and paving, that it was going to actually take 2 years to do that instead of one. So we had some flexibility in our program to move this one up. And that's why we're going forward with this. We are advertising for it now. We can get this, hopefully award the project in April and get the structure built, all of the supplies and everything sent up before it freezes, and hopefully get it built as quickly as we can before freeze up. And that's all.
Okay, very good. And the same match for that program?
Yes.
All right, any questions for Department of Transportation? See that? Thank you very much. Okay, I believe that concludes the items for the aspect supplemental. Are there any additional questions? Or we have everybody here? Okay, seeing none, then we'll put this aside for the time being and take up the next supplemental, which is the Energy House Bill 369, which time we'll turn the gavel over to my co-chair.
Thank you, Representative Meyer. First off, I'd like to say I'm glad to be back, I think. I would much rather be here than where I've been the last couple of weeks. I appreciate everyone's patience and thoughts and concerns, and I'd just like to say thank you to those that have at least thought about us in the last couple of weeks, and I do appreciate it. With that, I'll try to get off of that, and we'll move to House Bill 369, Energy Supplemental. Cheryl, I see you're here. The governor's office, she'll be presenting an overview of the Fast Track Supplemental, followed by presentations from each department's making a request. And we will be hearing the supplemental by department. So I have a list here. We'll start with Commerce and go down to Corrections and Environmental, Health, Social Services, the MVA, Natural Resources, Transportation, Governor's Office, Law, and Fish and Game. With that, good afternoon, Cheryl.
Well, thank you. Welcome back. Cheryl Fresca, Office of Management and Budget. The legislation you have before you was our first supplemental that we introduced the first week of session. And it was something that was out of the ordinary in the sense that we felt early introduction was important because this addresses the high energy costs that not only state agencies are facing, but also the high energy costs that households, low-income households around the state, rural communities are also facing. So we wanted to get it in front of you early in the hopes that we could see earlier action, given that it's hard to believe on a day like today, but we are still in the midst of a winter season. So what you have are a number of requests that assistance to communities and individuals. The assistance to communities totals about $13 million. A big share of that is the Small Municipal Energy Assistance Program that you funded and agreed to last session. At that time, we did hope that it would be a one-year kind of assistance to the local governments, but with high energy costs continuing, we're back before you to consider continuing this assistance. And the department can talk to you about how this has helped a number of the municipalities around the state meet their utility costs this winter so far. Power cost equalization and then the bulk fuel bridge loan program fall into that category. And again, Commerce can speak to the benefits of those programs. Assistance to low-income households. This would be a state contribution to the federally funded program that does provide assistance for paying utility bills to low-income folks. Well, I'm reading from notes, so I'm not going down the list. Yeah. Mine's the introduction, and then the departments who actually know what they're talking about will provide you and be able to answer the questions that you may have. So I sort of skip around. So, low-income households, $8.8 million. And again, that would provide assistance so that when we introduced this bill, it was based on enabling households to purchase the same amount of fuel that they could 2 years ago before prices went up. So that was the idea behind that. And then we have almost $23 million for state agencies. The biggest chunk of that is for the Marine Highway System, almost $15 million. And that one is probably especially of timely nature, given that the system will be facing running out of bucks by the end of March, I believe. But the system is here to speak to that issue. And then we have about $6.5 million for gas line work. At the time of introduction, that was $1 million for the governor's office, $5.4 million for the Department of Law. There's since been an amendment to reduce the governor's office work to down to $500,000. And then $500,000 for the Arctic Winter Games. And this is a situation where, again, it's the timing of the event that had us included in this initial supplemental bill, as opposed to the idea that supplementals are only for unanticipated events. So it's a vehicle to help that community in hosting the games, which will be held in early March. So with that, there's been a couple of amendments since we did introduce it. We did send over one today for the Department of Fish and Game regarding their energy increases. They're here to speak to the reasons why they need it, and it's just a question that it did get overlooked earlier while we were preparing the bill. So with that, I'd have to answer any macro-type questions, and then the departments are here to speak to any specific questions as you go through the bill.
Thank you, Cheryl. Any questions for Cheryl while she's in the hot seat? Seeing none, thank you, okay. Cheryl.
Thank you.
First, we'll move to Commerce. And I believe online we also have Mark Smith with Crowley Marine online. Mark, we will take up your testimony regarding some energy issues with the Department of Commerce probably after they make their presentation. So, looks like we have Sam. Tom?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and other committee members. I am Samuel Thomas, Admin Director from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And we have two requests here. It is, one is bridge, bulk fuel bridge grants, and another one is small municipal assistance program. The first one is the $500,000 request. The rural Alaskan communities are highly dependent on the petroleum products for their sustainability. Therefore, a lot of these small communities requires electricity be generated through diesel generators, goods and services provided by barge or by plane, heating homes and community facilities with diesel fuel. And to purchase fuel at a reasonable price, communities usually depends on the barging, winter fuel supplies by the end of the summer. Usually they obtain sufficient funds to buy the winter fuel supplies. Sometimes we fly the fuel right in the middle of the winter. When we fly fuel to a community right in the middle of the winter, it usually costs a little more high. The sustainable, if you don't do this one, you know, they had to, you know, pay the cost. Therefore, the sustainability of these communities would be further diminished as the cash flow problem, because most of these villages in the hard communities, you know, they don't have any real cash flows to pay higher price of the heating, you know, fuel, electricity, or community services such as water or wastewater facilities. The state of Alaska recognized this challenge, therefore they came up with a different program. One of the program was power cost equalizations, and that usually normalized the cost of electricity. Then we have another program, Alaska Energy Authority. They fund the bulk fuel revolving loan fund to the communities. The last year, the legislature approved that small municipality assistance program to help the communities to meet their needs. And it was something like $6.45 million. That really helped, but still it doesn't resolve all the community's problems because each program has its own limitations. Therefore, this is where the state of Alaska came up with, or vice versa, Commerce came up with a new program, bulk fuel bridge program. And that was designed to help the communities that were unable to purchase fuel for the winter season. In 2004-2005, when the program started, Denali Commission provided $500,000 to start this program. At the same time, the governor's office also provided approximately $400,000, you know, to start this one. The intent of the program was to assist communities with the purchase and delivery of fuel used for heating and electricity generation. Especially at the starting of the winter time, you know, and the barge needs to go through the river. Therefore, always the Division of Community Advocacy makes sure they provide enough before the end of the summer to these communities. It was a big challenge for some of these communities. Those communities participated in the bulk fuel bridge program were assured access to these funds as long as they repaid to the fund. And I believe in 2004, when we started this program, we helped almost 12 communities. And most of the communities, I believe, they repaid the loan. We provide the grant to one of the facilities. One of the grantees, actually, it's called RAS, Rural Alaska Fuel Services, and they just delivered all the fuel to the communities, and they are very familiar with these communities, and they have a very good communication relationship with the administrators and these village leaders, and that really helped. And because of the fuel cost is really high now, in September 2005 we were requesting the USDA feds to whether they can give us a little more money, and they provided $350,000 to run this fuel program. But it's not going to resolve the fuel, higher fuel prices. Therefore, we do need more funding to support because of the fuel cost. It's, keep increasing. I believe the nationwide statistics shows that it is compared to 2004, there is almost a 35% increase in the fuel prices. Especially when we look at the communities, except North Slope Borough, most of the other communities are paying maybe close to $5. Naslo Borough doesn't pay that much money because it subsidizes most of the residential fuel prices, even though they don't do commercial. Therefore, this now the most of the community, if a community don't pay back the money to RAPS, that is Rural Alaska Fuel Services, they are the one doing the job, then they usually, hold back until they pay at least a little more, or not the full amount of the loan, at least they make sure they paid that loan little by little, because most of these communities don't have sufficient cash flow problems. That's the main reason the department is asking another $500,000 to support this grant to the RAPS, so they can really help these communities. In the current year, I believe there were something like 13 communities asking, for help. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sam. Are there any questions to Sam? Seeing none, Sam, I had a question, and I don't know if Cheryl got out of here, but she made a comment there that one of these programs was an effort to and designed to keep the cost of fuel at the cost of what it was 2 years ago. And is one of those programs actually designed to try to do that? And is it accomplishing it? And the reason I ask is because I know in my area, even though I'm on the road system, my heating fuel, which is natural gas, luckily, has went up close to 40% in the last 2 years. and I realize that my area is not receiving any kind of a break from any energy assistance, other than we have a reasonable price of gas now. But so I'm curious, are we trying to do that, is keep the cost down to what it was 2 years ago on some of these programs, or?
That's the intent of the Department of Commerce, but I don't know whether we can.
Okay. All right. I'm sure Carl has cheap fuel out his neck of the woods, too. Well, he does, actually. I haven't thought about that. Any other questions of Sam? Seeing none, I believe that was all of the...
We have one
more. Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Mr. Chair, the next one is the request for the 6 point... $4 million for the SME program, that is small municipalities. I'm wondering about that. Energy assistance program. And it is. The Small Municipality Assistance Program provides bank grants to all small municipalities. That is 2,500 and smaller populations. We have almost 135 small cities in the state of Alaska. This helps to purchase for the fuel, repairing previous debt with the fuel suppliers and addressing outstanding loan balances that needs to be paid to the Alaska Energy Authority. And because these are small, you know, municipalities, even though they get a lot of other, you know, help from different sources, but still, because of the fuel price is so high, they are trying to keep up with that cost. They couldn't keep up with the cost, so they were all, you know, looking for more help from the Department of Commerce. And I believe even the in response to the current energy crisis, our governor has also pledged to seek financial assistance to meet the fuel cost and provide more energy assistance to the communities. Now, the last year, the price of diesel fuel soared, and with an unanticipated price increases for every household. The cost of the small municipalities were really high. It stopped to the 2004 cost increases. And the increase as much as 65%. I believe Mr. Chair and the committee members, we have already provided this fuel prices across Alaska to all of you. Therefore, that will, you know, speak itself about the prices in price increase in most of the cities. Now, there are some, you know, pros and cons on this one. Is one other thing here, some of the cities requested whether they can use this program to support their electricity. But I do not know too much about that one, but I think this program doesn't allow to meet the electricity bills. Now, if you would like to know more about this program, I can invite one of the program managers I have here with me.
I think it might be a good thing. I think that, you know, all of us were, I know I was, that last year we thought that there was an exception to the high cost of fuel. And this was enacted to be a one-time program. Now we see that it's not a one-time program. It looks like it's going to be a recurring program. And, you know, we realize, I think, that we have PCE and other forms of programs out there for energy assistance, and I think there probably are some questions about how long this is going to last, where, you know, who all it benefits, and, you know, what's the, I would like to know what the difference is between this probably and the actual PCE.
Okay. With your permission, may I invite the Bill Ross?
Bill Rothman.
My name is Bill Rolfson. I'm an employee of the Department of Commerce.
Go ahead, Bill.
Could you repeat the question, please?
I realize there's a lot of communities that this affected, and originally the governor proposed this program to be a one-year program. Now we see it's in its second year. You know, I'd be curious as to what's the difference between this program and PCE, and which villages that it affects, and would we be better off to have one program versus two programs?
Co-Chair Chenault, the Power Cost Equalization Program, which I don't administer, but from my understanding of the program, it's to benefit the individual residents within each municipality to reduce their high cost of electricity. This is a fuel program that helps the municipality, the local government, not the individual residents, and it's to help the municipality pay fuel for things like running their water and sewer utility, heating their community buildings, and so on. So it's a local government, it's a community aid for fuel versus PCE, which helps the individual residents with their electric bills.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just the fact that the schools are missing, could you speak to that?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly. Most of the municipalities on this list, because they're so small, are not municipal school districts. There's probably a few on this list that are boroughs or first-class cities, so they would be municipal school districts. The program didn't look at whether or not they operated schools or not. It was just if they were under a certain size, they received the funding. Under the assumption that if you're under a certain size, you're struggling right now with your finances because of your lack of capacity to generate revenues locally, and also the fact that with the elimination of revenue sharing, most of these communities relied on that funding for 20% to 40% of their operating budget. So without that assistance, this assistance in helping them purchase fuel was made that much more important.
Was there any look at, Mr. Chairman, was there any look at the fact that somebody that has a problem heating their home in downtown Anchorage where there isn't a tree in sight, versus someone on the Yukon River that can cut a cord of wood by nightfall? Any taken into account that in some cases there may be alternatives?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, no, it was strictly based on population threshold.
Thank you.
No other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we'll move on to I better go down the list here. Commerce. PC, we talked about Buck Fuel, we talked about. Mark Smith with Crowley Marine. You were wanting to make some comments dealing with the energy supplemental. And for the life of me, I can't remember which part of it you wanted to deal with, but I know it was with comments. Mark, are you online?
Yes. Mr. Chair, just wanted to speak, you know, in support of the municipal funding portion of this bill.
Go ahead, Mark. For the record, would you go ahead and state your name and who you're affiliated with?
Yes, my name is Mark Smith, and I'm with Crowley. Crowley provides bulk fuel to a great number of these villages that may be recipients of these grant funds. And I'd like to just point out that even with the assistance offered by the revolving bulk fund, it's often very difficult for villages to even put out their 10% that is required to get their annual fuel. In many cases, we only have one to two stops in many of these villages, and it's very critical for maintaining the state infrastructure that relies on the municipalities. And Crowley is even less inclined to grant credit these days because there is no revenue sharing, as Mr. Rawlson pointed out, and many of these communities and municipalities are in financial distress. So, you know, based on those facts, I think that, you know, Crowley is definitely, you know, wanting to do anything we can to assist villages in making, you know, timely loan applications and making sure that they do have the state's required 10% funding available.
Okay, and thank you, Mark, for your comments. We'll stay with Commerce, and we'll go to Section 7, Line 46. Which is the Audi Winter Games appropriation. And I think Mr. Pop from the Kenai Peninsula Borough was wanting to speak to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here today. My name is Bill Pop. I am a special assistant to Mayor John Williams on oil, gas, and mining issues, but I also am Revenue Development Chairman for the 2006 Arctic Winter Games. 4 years ago, the Arctic Winter Games were up for bid as far as Alaska's once-in-a-decade opportunity to host the games. The games have been going on for 38 years and have grown quite a bit from where they started out with a few hundred kids participating from a couple of provinces in Canada and Alaska to an event now that encompasses seven countries in the circumpolar region and will have over 1,900 athletes and participants from those countries, coaches and officials, as well as 2,700 volunteers. There'll be in excess of 4,000 to 5,000 spectators coming to the events. And it is Alaska's one opportunity for this decade to host the games. They rotate around between different provinces and different countries. 4 years ago, the Kenai Peninsula Borough put in its bid to host the Arctic Winter Games on behalf of the United States and the state of Alaska, and was successful in that bid, and put together a strategy that was involving a combination of private sector funds, federal funding for some needed capital improvements and some operational dollars, as well as some dollars from the state of Alaska. In 1996, when the games were held in Eagle River, this was a $1.2 million line item for the state of Alaska to help host those games, as well as the private sector funding and federal funding that came through in excess of $4 million for that particular decade's games. Our budget at this point in time is now standing at $5 million with approximately $4.3 million in cash and another $700,000 in in-kind contributions. We've generated contributions from over 75 private sector sources, companies and individuals, ranging anywhere from $5,000 to $100,000 sponsorships. We also have five municipalities that are participating in the games. The Kenai Peninsula Borough has invested $500,000 in the games as part of its commitment as the host community, as well as in-kind contributions from several other communities within the Kenai Peninsula Borough, in excess of $100,000 per community. In 2005, we were on track and achieving our fundraising goals, but then we saw something that was totally unexpected, and that was, to begin with, a very significant tsunami event, then followed by several hurricanes, earthquakes, all of which have taken a huge chunk out of the private sector where we had devoted a big chunk of our fundraising goals towards. In fact, our goal for the state of Alaska in our original game plan was only $750,000. We had felt based on previous fiscal realities for the state of Alaska, that it would be prudent to seek additional funding elsewhere in the private sector. Right or wrong, that has turned out to be something that has become a real challenge in the last 12 months. We call it the Katrina effect. We've seen this affect us not only on our private sector contributions, but also even at the federal level. We had a $200,000 wrap-up appropriation coming through the U.S. State Department. It would have been a third installment, bringing that particular line of funding up to $500,000. That got caught up in the Katrina sweep, as it became known in Congress, in the final stages of the 2005 legislative calendar. We have found ourselves short, and we have come to the governor and requested his support for a $500,000 appropriation, which you see in this particular bill. The games do take place March 5th through the 11th. We are on track towards putting on the games, but we are seeking this funding to help us to wrap up our final approximately 8% of our budget to complete the games and to make them an event that all the state of Alaska can be proud of. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions for Bill? And Bill, I was trying to get caught up on some things, but did you talk to the issue of the DOD money?
Oh, no, sir, I did not.
If you would, please.
I will. This has created some confusion for not only the public, but for ourselves also. In late December, early January, we got word of a $500,000 change in the Department of Defense budget, an amendment, an earmark, that was placed in the budget by Senator Stevens, specifically for the Arctic Winter Games. In the initial, we had no idea that this was coming. This was just done a couple of days before the bill was passed out of the Senate and out of the Congress to the President's desk. That particular appropriation, initially, we were led to believe, could be used in part for some of our direct expenses related to security. Approximately a week and a half ago to 2 weeks ago, we finally were able to ascertain that no, that funding is specifically for the Department of Defense and Homeland Security, for the security services that they are providing support for, anything from high-tech surveillance cameras within the various athletes' villages, both inside the buildings and out, to communications that are outside the normal phone systems and police radio systems, as well as the support personnel that are going to be needed to operate those. But I had Posse Comitatus quoted to me. I had any number of federal statutes and law quoted to me as to how these funds are not available to our organization. So we initially thought that we had a little bit of unexpected luck, but that has not turned out to be the case.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, Bill, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we'll move to Department of Corrections. Charlene Griffin. Good afternoon.
For the record, my name is Charlene Griffin. I'm the Admin Services Director for the Department of Corrections. We have the question today for increased fuel costs in our correctional facilities. Our request is $405,000 statewide. We have experienced, as everyone has, an increase in our heating fuel, natural gas, and propane charges. If we compare fiscal year 04 to fiscal year 05, the cost of heating fuel, propane, and natural gas went up a little over $405,000. That is what we're requesting as a supplemental this year.
Is that all facilities?
It is all facilities.
Let's see, you also have, that was line, or section four, line six, and you also have expansion on line 54.
Yes, we do. We have an amendment in for Fairbanks Correctional Center to take a vacant Correctional Industries building there and make it a dorm that would house 50 inmates. This would be crisis overflow housing. Fairbanks has a emergency capacity of 211 offenders. We are running anywhere from 222 on the first day of July up to near 300. we have exceeded the man day capacity at Fairbanks Correctional Center by 10,641 man days through the end of December. We have inmates sleeping in boats in the gym, and we are now doing two transports a week between Anchorage and Fairbanks, moving inmates out of there. That has increased our transport costs, our PTO overtime, and so on. We don't see in the near future this trend going down. Many of these inmates are pretrial, and we'd like to get started on this project to convert that vacant building to 50 beds to house the overflow. We did have a tent in Fairbanks last year when we had the escape attempt and the piece of heavy equipment was rammed into the side of the correctional center. My understanding is as they were going through the yard, they took out the tent.
Well, I think about Sheriff Joe on a regular basis, and since I was in Arizona, one of these days I'll get to go down and meet the man, but sometimes I concern myself with what we do for some of our prisoners. Billy, do you have something?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question about the previous heating fuel. Are there any clearing issues, I guess I hate to use that term for lack of a better term, that require, that limits you from any fuel efficiency? So I know some of the poor people, fixed income folks, have had to turn down the heat, wear an extra sweater, or I guess an extra jumpsuit. Is there, not to be facetious, but are you limited by settlements from doing efficiency measures?
Through the chair, Representative
Conservation Saltz. Measures, I guess.
There indeed was a portion of Cleary that spoke to temperatures in correctional facilities, and off the top of my head, I can't tell you what the minimum temperature was or the maximum, but in partial settlement agreements leading up to the final settlement, there were temperatures that were arranged that the facility should be maintained within. Like I said, I don't recall what the minimum or the maximum was. Historically, I know at Lemon Creek Correctional Center, when we had a particularly hot summer in Juneau, we actually had to haul ice to the dorms in order to do something to accommodate the fact that we were unable to stay within those ranges of temperatures. However, I don't believe that Cleary is the only driving force anymore. We were released from oversight by the courts, and there was legislation that was passed. It was Representative Mulder's legislation. It was the Prison Litigation Act, which took us out from under, I believe, portions of things that we could or could not be sued for. I'm not sure where temperature sits in that.
Mr. Chairman, it's comforting to know that they're comfortable at all times. And I guess you can just follow up and see if there are any.
Indeed, I will.
I was hot a lot of times. I know it. Tough it out. Wait for the ice delivery.
Okay. Good job. Representative Kelly.
Yeah. Upper limit's 4 below in Fairbanks, and we bring the ice in for kids.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions for corrections?
Representative Schnault, if I could, Representative Meyer asked a question yesterday regarding the cost of care in state, and I had stated that I thought it was $110.69 a day. It was $110.08 a day through the end of December, at which point the new rate came into effect, and that new rate is $107.42 a day.
Thank you. Apparently I missed somebody on Commerce, I think Sarah Fisher. Go ahead. Are you online, and were you wanting to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher Goad. I'm a financial analyst for the Alaska Energy Authority. I'm actually here to answer questions regarding the Power Cost Equalization Supplemental or the Circuit Rider Supplemental. I think those are Sections 3 and Section, excuse me, Section 2 and Section 5.
Well, it's 2A and Section 2A and 2B? Or 5, okay.
Yeah, it is 5.
Yeah.
The,
right.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Chair.
Thank you. Should have been a spreadsheet provided to the committee regarding the power cost equalization funding levels and the status of our pro rata levels for this fiscal year.
Is that a one-page sheet?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Prepared by the authority on 127 of 06?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I have it in front of me.
I just wanted to point out in that, that spreadsheet that what this requested supplemental for power cost equalization is funded. It would allow AEA to pay PCE at approximately 99% of the full funding level for this current fiscal year. The second column shows what our current funding level is of 18.7 and the estimated average prorated level if we remain at 18.7 million for the full fiscal year. Our average prorated level will be 75% for this fiscal year. Currently, we are prorated at 78%, and we anticipate going to a prorated level at 66% in March. And then the remaining columns of that spreadsheet just show the history of the prorated levels for the program for the last few fiscal years, showing what the historical 15.7 million level has provided for the program, the initial prorated levels of 86%, and basically, with the high cost of fuel, what has been happening to the PCE funding and how much further we've had to prorate with the existing funding levels. So if there are any questions regarding that spreadsheet, I'd be happy to answer those.
Any questions? I think they're trying to mull it over right now, Sarah, but I don't see any questions right now, so I thank you for your comments. And I'm sure that as we get farther into this bill, there will be some questions on the supplemental and what effect it really does have. So I thank you for your input.
You're welcome.
Next we'll move to environmental conservation. Mike Mathis. Not saying them, they must not have wanted any money.
You just saved some money. Yeah.
That one's easy. No. They may be delayed or tied up. Next we'll move to what? Kristen Ryan, are you online?
I'm online, yes.
Okay. Please speak
you
up.
You couldn't hear me.
Speak up. I have three lists here to try to pick a name off of and oh, we couldn't hear you. They weren't letting you speak. If you'd like to go ahead and talk about Section 4, Line 7.
Yes, for the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the director for the Division of Environmental Health. And while the building and maintenance and operation component is not in my division's budget, the only building that the Department of Environmental Conservation owns is the laboratory, which I do oversee. So today what we have put in the budget is an increased cost for the gas and the electric bills for the new laboratory that we underestimated would cost us to keep the building heated and running. In our initial estimates when we did our fiscal note, was written in 2000 and was based on the public health lab utility bill costs, and ours were... it was just not close to the estimate, and we need an additional $98,000 to match what we're seeing that we'll be spending for the year.
Okay. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Hey guys, it's my first day back. Yeah, cut me a little bit of slack. Next we'll move to Hess. Is it Laura?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Laura Baker, Budget Chief for the Department of Health and Social Services. What I'd like to do is kind of give you an introduction as to how the department develops some fuel increase estimates for our 24-hour facilities, and this will apply to sections 43A, 43D, 43E, and 43F. This past fall, with rising fuel costs, we took a look at our 24-hour facilities. It includes Alaska Psychiatric Institute, all of the Pioneer Homes, and all of the juvenile facilities, as well as our public health lab. And based on the costs that we were realizing in 05 and projecting that out to 06, we anticipate a 28% fuel increase. And I would note that this fuel increase that we looked at included only electricity, natural gas, propane, and heating fuel categories. None of our estimates involve the vehicle fuel rates. The breakdown of that request is $89,000 for Alaska Psychiatric Institute, $308,000 for our Pioneer Homes facilities, and $89,000 for Alaska Psychiatric Institute, $308,000 for our Pioneer Homes, $176,800 for our probation services, which includes the, it's not for probation, it's for all youth facilities, and then we have a public health lab, 55.1%.
Nursing also?
That is a different calculation. The nursing fuel increase and the state facilities rent fuel increase, that's a couple lines down from that. Those two costs, the nursing of $30,000 and the DOA leasing facilities rent component for $464,600, those are calculations provided to the department by the Department of Administration, and those are for state leased buildings.
Questions?
And then we also have on line 9, section 43B, our energy assistance program. The department has a low-income energy assistance program that is a 100% federal program and that provides low-income heating fuel assistance to families in need. It is a needs-based program that's based on 150% poverty level. For instance, a family of four would have an income of $36,000. In reviewing the fuel costs for the last past year, 2 years, we've seen a 90% increase based on the spot fuel prices across the state. The supplemental request is requesting $8.8 million in state general funds to supplement this federal program for this year. And that funding then would actually be applied to approximately $6 million of that would go to the state LIHEAP program, and the other $2.9 million would be sent to the native LIHEAP program providers. Just to back up a minute, the federal program does split the program between the state program and the tribal programs as well. And I can answer any questions on this proposal.
Okay. Hey, would you ask some questions?
Yeah, you mentioned 150% poverty level with a figure. What's the actual poverty level here in Alaska? Not 150%, but just 100%, just the standard.
I can't answer that right now off the top of my head.
It's 24 because you said it was 36.
No, what I was using as an example was a family of four.
Okay.
Would be a $36,000 income for a family of four. Would be 150% poverty level. That's just one size as an example.
I'd like to ask you about the low-income energy assistance program, $8.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
General funds. Is that normally 100% federal money? How does that work?
Yes, sir. It is 100% federal. This year, because of the increased fuel costs and the federal government not increasing our allocation. The Alaska's total is approximately $11.3 million that the feds send to Alaska, $7.8 million of that to the State Department Health and Social Services LIHEAP program, and another $3.4 million to the tribal providers.
Okay, do you have anything in the budget for next year then?
No, we do not. Just the federal funding, the base funding.
Okay. And one more than let's see. The API fuel cost is $89,000.
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay. And that's that seems like a lot. Is there some reason why that's so high?
Mr. Chairman, we did review our 24-hour facilities. Again, they are 24-hour facilities. It's not like an office building. I mean, you do end up running a lot more of those energy costs up 24 hours a day.
Okay, I may come back to that one. I think we have Representative Jewell and Representative Hawker have questions. Go ahead, Representative Jewell.
Just a comment. If it becomes official, I'll pass it on to the committee, but I got some soft numbers just in my hometown of Kotzebue, where the elderly were surveyed on their heating. Most of their heating systems were 25 years or older. Most could only afford to buy 55 gallons at a time, which oftentimes meant that if they didn't have the money, they'd run out, and that puts a lot more stress on those systems. Surprisingly, others had, even though Kotzebue is not a wooded area, wood stoves to try and help out. But the other piece of this that probably doesn't get talked about anywhere, but it's happening to all of those groups in addition to those who are above the 150 or below, which who don't meet that standard. In most cases, the elders are sleeping with extra clothes on because they are turning down the temperatures, because they are trying to conserve, and they just don't have the money.
Thank you, Representative Jill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know this one's coming. There's a category of 24-hour facilities within the Department of Health and Social Services that operates 24-hour facilities statewide. Why aren't they here for a fuel supplemental?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, I guess I misunderstand your question.
Yeah, there's a category of 24-hour facilities we operate statewide in Health and Social Services that aren't on your list asking for a supplemental. I'm kind of curious why that happened.
We looked at those facilities that we traditionally have concerns with, again, the youth facilities, the Pioneer Homes, API, and the Public Health Center.
What I'm not seeing here are juvenile justice facilities.
Actually, they are. Those are the ones that are rolled into probation services.
You've rolled it all into probation services.
Yes, we will allocate that out. Sorry, through the chair, Representative Hawker. We will allocate that out. We do have the breakdown in the supplemental backup, I believe.
Are they asking for full funding?
These increases are based on what the estimates are based on the forecast.
Didn't we have testimony in Health and Social Services that they were only asking, juvenile justice were actually only asking for a 21% increase in relation to what their full funding level was?
For fuel or for other purposes?
And their operating levels and fuel was part of that number.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawker, and I need to follow up with you on this one.
Okay, because it just seems like we have a budget for, I'm just picking Health and Social Services, and I just will not make the comment to any other department, but you've got a $1.8 billion budget this year. It's $1.8 billion. And it just always worries me that we can't find a little bit of money around the edges and in the cracks when life gets tight here. You know, we're in here asking for $89,000 for API. That's a $21 million budget item alone. I don't see any effort to economize. Certainly echo the rest of the sentence of the committee here, and that's something I'd sure like all the departments that are in here asking for the supplementals to consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Any other questions for the S part? Representative Schnell.
Yeah, I did have one. In here, total energy supplemental, the department's asking for about $1.123 million. Mm-hmm. Now, we've asked for the numbers, and if I remember correctly, we asked for the first 6 months of 05, and the first 6 months of 06. And the numbers we've got back from OMB on their sheet show that they're looking at $365.8 thousand versus the $1.123 million. And so, I mean, I know if you can answer the question, I guess it'd be great. If not, then if you can kind of give me the reason why there's a discrepancy of roughly $800,000 between what you're asking for and what the OMB info fuel sheet shows.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you're speaking of the cost comparison that your office had sent out. Okay. In looking at those comparisons, you were right. We looked at all of the accounting system account codes for electricity, water, sewage, natural gas, propane, heating oil, SEF fuel, equipment fuel. That did, from a six-month comparison, come out at approximately 17.8% increase. However, if you looked at that same information just on those three categories we looked at, the electricity, natural gas, propane, and heating oil, it comes out to be about 20.7. And then if you dice that down again and look at only our 24-hour facilities that we included in the supplemental, it does come out to about a 28% increase based on a 17% increase over the prior year and 26% in this year. The legislature was nice enough to fund some supplemental increases in some of these facilities last year, a much lower amount, which was equated to about 15% at that point in time. And we have backed that out, and then thus we've come up with our 28% for these facilities.
All right. I'm sure we'll discuss it probably more in the office, but thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move.
Thank you.
Well, how about Military and Veterans Affairs? Mr. Kramer. There he is. All right, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Kramer. I'm the Admin Service Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. First of all, we wish to extend our condolences to you and your family. You will see us on lines 15, 16, and 17, sections 4A, B, and C. The first one is for Army Guard facilities, fuel and utility increases. We're asking for $684,600 of general funds and general fund match with an IA of $7,800 for a total of $692.4. Our Army Guard facilities, we have 216 structures, buildings that we're providing facilities, utilities for. A total of about 1,155,000 square feet in 83 communities. Most of those are in rural locations. Our second request is for Air National Guard facilities. We're asking for $100,000 of general fund match, $300,000 of federal authorization for a total of $400,000. We're heating approximately 681,700 square feet. With that, providing utilities for and about 50 different buildings. Our third is for our Military Youth Academy for a total of $32,200 of general funds for heating and providing utilities for about 69,400 square feet and 23 different facilities or buildings. and that's our quest. We've experienced what we've been able to measure, a 33% increase average across all of our facilities.
Fuel cost increase?
Yes, sir.
I would have somewhat similar to the same question, John, earlier, that OMB sheet versus what you're asking for is a wide range of about $700,000 difference in what they project versus what you're asking for in total supplemental, or in, total supplemental. So, probably my office work with your department a little bit to see.
Be happy to do that.
We can't figure out. The percentages jump from department to department. There's no rhyme or reason in some of these that we can determine. And it's frustrating. I'm sure that the fuel costs for your facility here are the same as the university's cost for the facility here. They may be different in other parts of the state. I think we all understand that, but trying to get an actual handle on these costs is a concern. So, are there any questions of John? Seeing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we will go to Natural Resources Parks, Section 4, Line 18, and Mr. Nicole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Nico Bussum, the Administrative Service Manager. We respectfully request $92,000 of additional funding for our parks operation. Parks is widespread throughout the state. We have 121 park units. We have over almost 400 buildings. We have many other vehicles that depend on fuel. And so this is about a conservative 30% increase in the cost compared to the previous year. It's for heating fuel, utilities, and the like. So the reason you do not see any request for any of the other programs is because they are all within the resource appropriation. Parks is in a unique and single appropriation, and they need to make up the cost. And this year, as we testified to yesterday, Parks is having not only energy problems, but also problems in collecting the revenues that they are supposed to operate on. So,
Representative Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nico, same question as yesterday. You state not funding this supplement will result in reduced or limited service levels. What specifically will be the reduction in service levels?
Senator Representative Hawker, if we do not receive this funding, then we cannot call back a bunch of our seasonals. We will not be able to drive the vehicles for the rangers to the outlying park units, and there's just a myriad of activities that we have looked at, and we have the list that you requested, and we can go through that with you to show you, because there's 121 park units spread throughout the state. We're trying to make sure that we minimize the impact to any community, but any community that does have park units, if this is not funding, we would have to look at reducing services.
Representative Parker.
You were just talking mostly of something like transporting personnel. The request here is for, does that include when you say fuel convenience?
We have 397 buildings that in one shape or another needs to be heated to, so.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions? Thank you, Nico. Next, we'll move on to transportation. Nancy Hyde back there, so there she is. Section 6A through 6H, lines 19, 21, or 25.
Correct. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Nancy Slagle, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Yes, we have several requests for increased utilities and equipment fuel.
Section 46A and 46B are for our central region and northern region facilities components. These are the components that are responsible for maintaining all of our state buildings. We have somewhere around 600, somewhere between 600 and 700 buildings that we're responsible for. We're looking in the in central region specifically, the increase for heating fuel and an increase for electricity. And in the northern region, the heating fuel, electricity, and we have water and sewer increases as well. Moving on to the 46C and 46D and 46E, those are our three regional highways and aviation components. Again, those are these are specific to the equipment fuel that we need for our heavy equipment as well as our light-duty equipment that's being used to maintain the road systems. We're looking at right now predicting approximately $2.65 per gallon for central region. That's taking into account, you know, averaging between Anchorage prices and the rural areas, so it you have to take all of that into account when you're projecting the amounts that's needed. And again, in northern region and central region, those prices are a little different on average. And then at 46F and 46G are specific to the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport and the increased utilities costs and equipment fuel costs required for the operation of that airport. We're looking at about a 20% increase in electricity and natural gas for the airport, and approximately the same for equipment fuel as well. And then moving on to 46H is the marine highway system. This is, as Cheryl had stated, this is the larger request. 14.7 million dollars. We have a large fleet of vessels, and that does require a great deal of fuel. Any type of a price increase has a major impact on our budget, and this is to cover those costs for the increased fuel.
Okay. I understand. I've talked to Mr. Taylor quite a bit about it. Any questions? That's Mr. Taylor. No, they're being very quiet. Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative?
I know this. Mr. Taylor knows Sheriff Arpaia, if you were interested in interaction.
Okay. I know he did. I was watching his expressions whenever I was talking about
that. Those earlier words you've expressed.
Would we have some facilities open or not? We might be able to use this floating facilities.
That's what we've discussed. Okay. My only concern, if I could, Mr. Chairman, is that we are the only department, I believe, within this budget.
Rob?
I'm sorry.
Please.
We're the only department, I believe, and I'm not trying to speak for others, that's within this budget that is time critical. We've transferred every dime we've got. We have gone through admin. And normally we would receive our funding in four increments per year. Every one of those increments has been transferred to us. We're not allowing any travel. We're not allowing all kinds of things right now. As of March 20, if we don't have this budget passed and signed by the governor, I start tying up votes, and I have no choice in that. The law of the state of Alaska does not allow me to expend funds that have not been authorized or appropriated by the legislature. We have burned up and used up all of what was left of the Marine Highways Replacement, Vessel Replacement Fund that had been established years ago and upon which this system has kind of relied for humps and bumps in the past. This is time critical. Other agencies and departments may be able to put their fuel bill or whatever off and find ways to coast on through to the end of the session with you. Tragically, we cannot. And as Mike Martin has said to me, he said, Robin, you better find a way to get that roughly $15 million, or because I don't want to be measured, he said, for a yellow or a red jumpsuit like you use out of Lemon Creek. And I don't either, Mr. Chairman. And with that plea, that's all we have to offer at this point. Thank you.
Yeah. It might be better than the pink one.
That's true. That's true.
Okay. Other than that, thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
For your comments. I appreciate it. Was that all you had, Nancy?
No, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's Ketchikan.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Section 8A and B, we are requesting funds for the Ketchikan Shipyard. This is a congressional earmark that was provided through the Safety Lou reauthorization bill for the highway program, surface transportation program. The Ketchikan Shipyard needs to construct a new 2,500-ton ship lift and transfer system. They have gone out to, they have signed an agreement with the Office of Natural Research to design and construct a $30 million high-speed beachable expeditionary craft, and to be able to go forward with meeting their requirements and building this, they need that ship lift. They have, on December 20th, published an invitation for bids, and they need to go forward with awarding of the bids in March, so that they can begin going forward and advertising for the project itself. So this is another time-critical requirement here to get this taken care of, so that we can provide the monies to ADA, and they in turn can continue with the construction of this ship lift.
Any questions on the ship lift? Representative Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this, I guess, is this part of our federal highway funding allocations?
Through the chair, Representative Parker, this is a congressional earmark that was included in the highway authorization bill itself. So it was outside of our regular entitlement program.
So this was not for the DW earmark.
I don't, part of it may have, I'm not sure, I would have to go back and look. I don't believe that.
Would like to know that.
Yeah,
answer.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
More questions? Thank you. Next, we will move on to. Yep, Section 6A. Linda? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Linda Perez, Administrative Director for the Governor's Office. Last year, the legislature appropriated $500,000 to the Executive Office to assist in the gas line negotiation efforts. We have expended those funds and are requesting an additional $500,000. The funds have been utilized for staff resources, consultants, travel, and costs associated with negotiation meetings. There, 6A reflects the $1 million request, which is amended on line 56 to 500,000.
Representative Stoltz?
Is it anticipated any of associated use of the jet would be charged to this account?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stoltz, I have not paid anything towards the jet out of these funds. I have not been billed for it.
Okay. Just have the blue shirts.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll move to the university.
Good afternoon. Welcome back.
I think.
My name is Pat Pitney. I'm University of Alaska budget officer. The university is requesting $2.8 million. This is directly related to fuel and utility cost increases. This is on top of $1.8 million in increases from in 05 that were not funded either in the operating budget of the appropriations or through a supplemental last year. So this is 2.8 on top of last year's $1.9 million increase. The six-month reality check, how were our costs, actual costs between December 04 to December 05 in utilities, estimates $2.5 million versus the $2.8 million request. We have experienced some price relief relative to our estimates. January may prove to be a tough month, however, with the cold weather. So although 2.8 is slightly above the 2.5 that the actuals have showed revealed through December, I believe it's going to be a very close estimate. In terms of efficiencies and what does the university do to conserve, there is an ongoing effort at all the campuses to conserve through the use of turning the temperature down for the buildings that aren't used in the evenings and overnight. Constant energy efficiencies as they go through and do any new maintenance and so forth. We have experienced some good things out in the community campuses where we've been able to do some renovations of facilities that have helped our energy efficiencies as well.
So. Well, that sounds better than the $22 million I show here on mine.
$22
million? I think it's just a typo. Any questions at the university? Seeing none, thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Meyer?
Yeah, couldn't we just close down the Fairbanks campus and consolidate it in that direction? Representative Kelly from Carroll.
I'll need a half an hour on that.
You want to discuss that later with him?
That's all he said. He work together.
Good. He must be getting slow. Next, we will go to about the court system. We're pretty much make you sit around here all day for this one.
That's fine, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dutton Wilbur from the Alaska Court System. We're requesting $87,100 for our energy cost increases from this winter. Most of that comes from our Anchorage, Palmer, Fairbanks facilities. We also have some costs for utilities, Tok, St. Mary's, and Kenai. These are the costs that have come on board since this past winter, and these this is the total of what we're asking for, $87,100.
Must have cheap costs in some of those, cheap fuel in some of those areas. Anyway, Doug, I don't see any questions, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we'll go to law.
Thank you.
afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Ostrowski. I'm the supervising attorney of the Oil, Gas, and Mining Section, Department of Law. I have a sneaking feeling it's usually not good to be last on the, or about last on the list when you're asking for budget increments, but nonetheless, our request in the bill for Division of Oil and Gas, or Oil, Gas, and Mining Section, represents essentially three components. Funding for ongoing royalty litigation, funding for ongoing tax tariff litigation, and funding for gas line work. And I'll briefly address these in turn. First, with respect to royalty litigation, as the members know, this section represents the Department of Natural Resources with respect to royalty matters. As the members are no doubt aware, there's been a long history of issues between the state and oil and gas producers how to properly value the state's royalty share of oil. In a nutshell, royalties are based on netbacks after certain costs, notably transportation, are subtracted. Royalty disputes tend to center on determining the value of oil, its destination, determining the cost of getting it there. Most of these disputes are handled in-house. However, when the dollars or the issues at stake are particularly significant, royalty owners almost always have used outside counsel, simply because they don't have the in-house resources to handle a discrete and occasional large pieces of litigation. We do likewise. Although we have a number of attorneys on our staff who are very knowledgeable on royalty issues and experienced in litigation, it'd be difficult and inefficient to try to maintain the in-house resources to try the large cases. So right now we have one large ongoing royalty reopener with ExxonMobil. And for that we've used the firm of Hosey and MacArthur. That's a firm, it's a small boutique firm that's represented the state in numerous royalty and tax issues over the years. I'm sure some of the members are familiar with the senior partner in that firm, Spencer Hosey, very talented trial lawyer, well-versed in Alaska oil and gas royalty and tax issues. So in this particular case, which has been ongoing for a number of years, the state has prevailed so far on two issues, resulting in almost $44 million for the state. Currently outstanding is an issue on transportation costs, which, if successful, result in approximately $27 million more to the state. The second broad area is tariff matters, and the section represents the state on tariff matters. And again, we have quite a bit of in-house expertise and try to handle tariff matters in-house. But when they're large tariff matters, and particularly with respect to TAPs, like the TAPs carriers, we use specialized outside counsel. Again, it's a matter of the dollars at stake, necessary to protect the state's, and the necessity to protect the state's interest, and also a function of the fact that FERC work is a specialty practice really only in Washington, D.C. Again, we're involved in a major case on tariffs right now, involving TAPS tariffs for the years 2003 and 2006. For that, we've used the law firm Morrison Forrester, and this is a firm the state's used over 30 years on pipeline tariff issues. I know some of the members are very familiar with that firm. The state filed a protest before the FERC of TAPS carriers rates for 2003 through 2006. Based on a variance between intrastate and interstate rates. And this stemmed from an RCA decision in 2002, which determined that the appropriate intrastate rate for TAPS is $1.96 a barrel. And that decision was recently affirmed just about, I think, a month and a half ago by the Superior Court. That's $1.96 a barrel. In the meantime, the TAPS carriers filed interstate rates with the FERC at an average of almost $4 a barrel. Both the state and Anadarko protested this tariff. And under FERC rules, rates cannot be discriminatory. Now, you have to think about this for a minute, because effectively these are the same thick barrels traveling through the same pipeline. For one set of barrels that were the use is intrastate, it's almost half the tariff is barrels that are used out of state. Since rates cannot be discriminatory, we've maintained that the interstate rates are discriminatory because they're almost twice what the intrastate rates are. for exactly the same service. Not the carriers are arguing essentially the mirror image. They want the FERC to take jurisdiction and raise intrastate rates to the interstate levels. And since 90% of the oil that goes down taps is interstate, it's extremely significant to the state's netback. And it's also significant because, as I'm sure you've heard before, lower tariffs help explorers. They attract explorers to the state because the cost of transportation is so significant a factor in decisions whether to explore and develop oil and gas. So if the state prevails in the case that's before the FERC now, under current production levels, tax revenues would increase by over $100 million a year. In addition, we recently filed a case challenging the TAPS carrier's costs on the strategic reconfiguration project. Now, let me be clear, we support bringing TAPS up to date and making it a more efficient line. However, the project has had cost overruns of about $200 million to date, and we believe that some of these costs may be imprudent, and we don't believe that, nor is the state required to pay for imprudent costs in the tariff. So those are the two main tariff cases that we're working on now. And finally, I'd like to spend just a minute talking about Gasline. For this, we've primarily used two contractors. Again, the law firm of Morrison & Forrester and the law firm of Preston Gates & Ellis. Morrison & Forrester is based out of D.C. Preston Gates & Ellis is a Seattle firm, but we primarily use their Anchorage office, which has been there for about 25 years. Now, one of the reasons we use outside contractors with the gas line is when you think of the nature of our practice, and I suppose any government lawyers, I mean, by nature, we don't have experience in negotiating large, in this case, huge commercial contracts. Plus, this particular endeavor really requires an amalgam of business, federal regulatory, and energy law experience. All these issues kind of come together in this project. And as with litigation, it's a discrete project. It doesn't make sense to bulk up the office for really a one-time thing. And frankly, I doubt we could attract the types of specialized lawyers that do this kind of work. I mean, nevertheless, we have devoted substantial in-house resources to it, pretty much four attorneys full-time, but it's also required the intensive and extended involvement of outside experts. So by and large, Morrison Forrester's role has been to provide the regulatory, commercial, transactional lawyers to assist in the day-to-day negotiations. They've been the chief state drafter of the contract, which I don't think I'm giving anything away is long, hundreds of pages. Obviously, it's a pretty complex document. And in part, it's become so complex because of the governor's decision to own part of the pipeline and ship state gas through it. When you think about it, what we're really doing, in a sense, is creating an Alyeska, a company to ship gas. It's a very difficult undertaking, made more difficult by the fact that one of the parties in what would normally be a commercial deal is a government, and it brings its own unique issues to the deal. So it's a complex undertaking. So, for example, in this, we've had to consider FERC issues that are of interest to a state government, explorer access to gas line, acquisition of capacity, FERC RCA interaction, open season regulations, federal tax questions, negotiations surrounding the creation of a limited liability company, which would actually be the owner of a gas line. And today we've also had proceedings before the FERC already, an Anchorage on the gas line. Preston Gates doesn't assist us generally in the day-to-day negotiations, but they've been the state bond counsel for many years, and they're really specialists in financing and bonding. And so we've not used them directly in the negotiations, but rather to evaluate legal issues with respect to various financing options, constitutional issues, then they come up with respect to fiscal certainty, taking gas in kind, the relationships of the state municipalities to payments in lieu of taxes. In addition, we've used them to help draft up some of the potential legislation. We have some partners here who are very, very experienced, a former Commissioner of Revenue about a couple administrations ago, Will Condon, who was my predecessor, unfortunately had to retire when his wife got sick, but is able to help part-time in this. So just to kind of conclude, I realize that spending money on lawyers is not everyone's first choice. But I think it's important, and we all probably agree it's important, to invest in protecting the state's interests. Looking at these bills, I'm very conscious of what outside counsel costs and closely monitor the assignments and the bills to make sure our lawyers are operating specifically in our direction and that we're getting good value for our money. I appreciate your attention, and I'm happy to try and address any questions you may have.
We have one question. Did you guys want to go
ahead?
Anyway, any questions? Representative Kelly,
how do you manage it?
Well,
I think there's three ways that I've learned. One is you trust them, and second is you trust them and verify everything. And the third one is you just on their backs all the time.
Well, if I may represent Kelly, on their backs all the time usually doesn't work because you're looking after the fact. What we usually do with the contracts is we consider. Well, first off, especially in relation to Gasline, we're virtually in day-to-day contact with these firms. And because any time you send somebody off on a project, if it's not, you have to think about what you want. Because if you casually go forth, it's easy to spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. So we're very clear with them about the types of things that we want. And we look at their work product. We look at the bills, of course, and we see, are these the types of things that we want to pay for? On certain discrete assignments, we'll get estimates because we don't want to send somebody forward on a $100,000 wild goose chase. So we have a certain amount of trust in these firms because we've worked with them for a long time. But it's always followed by verify. And we try to anticipate ahead of time, not so much that they'll overbills, but that will imprudently send them off to do something that later on we think we didn't really need done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at your detail sheet on this, $1.5 million of your request is for FY07. Why have you got that wrapped in the 06 supplemental?
Well, Representative Hawker, if I could, I'd like to ask Catherine Dowdy, our administrative director, and maybe she can help address this.
Well, for the record, Catherine Dottie, Administrative Services Director from the Department of Law. Representative Hawker, this is certainly not the first time this question's come up. I think it was just for us, it was a matter of taking a look at our need and realizing that what we're doing here in terms of litigation, in terms of the Gasline project, doesn't follow a nice, tight schedule. We are going to need some money that we don't have in a current capital request. Or in the operating base for the first 6 months of fiscal year 07 before we would have an opportunity to come back to the legislature and talk about supplementals again. So we bundle the two pieces, the piece that's the estimate for 07, the piece that's kind of, that we pretty much carefully penciled out a number of times for fiscal year 06, and thought that it would be much simpler and more efficient in terms of appropriating the money, in terms of requesting the money, to try to do it in one place at one time. Realizing that very often the legislature likes to confine these requests to 06, but that's just simply for efficiency's sake.
Well, that is an answer. Thank you.
Representative,
I suspect we'll be revisiting this
one,
I would hope, sir.
I am reasonably sure that we are. Thank you, Captain. And thank the Department of Law. Next, we will move on to Fish and Game. Mr. Lawson. we'll go through lines 7 through line 62, I think.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the record. I'm Tom Lawson, Admin Services Director for Fish and Game. Yes, we do have the last six items in the Energy Supplemental. We're asking for a total of $223,000, and this is for Comfish, Sport Fish and Wildlife Conservation. I know you're pressed for time here, so I'll be brief. The reason that we did not submit this actually in the first version of the bill is that at the point in time when OMB asked every department whether there were fuel increase needs, it was late in the fall, and frankly, because of the way that we budget in Fish and Game, it's a project-based budgeting, and we were challenged to come up with a methodology that we thought was simple enough to come up with a realistic estimate in terms of fuel cost increases. So we passed on the first version, and then last month we took another look at this, and what we saw is we had the benefit of 6 months of data, and so we looked at our total expenditures for FY05. We looked at the spending rate of expenditures for fuel costs for the first 6 months of 05. We had the FY06 data. We compared the two, and we were able to prorate out what the based on the spending rate in 05 for the first 6 months, we were able to calculate what we estimate our spending would be for all of 06. So that's how we came up with the numbers. Our major expenditures are in the heating oil and marine fuel categories. And so with that, I'll stop and I'll answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you, Tom, and I'm sure we'll get back to the department as we get closer to seeing what we're going to include and exclude from House Bill 369. So thank you for your time. With that, that's where we'll stop for today on House Bill 369. I think Representative Meyer has some announcements to make, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Chenault. Yes, I just want to go over the schedule for next week. It's going to be an interesting schedule. And it says, first of all, Mondays we have office. As you know, it's a state holiday, President's Day. Tuesday, we will have a meeting here. We'll take up, this will kind of be a cleanup day. We'll take up the House Bill 150, the radiological technicians, and House Bill 334, which is the municipal property tax exemption. And then also we got the Alaska Finance Corp dividend bill back. The Senate beat us on that. They've already passed it over on the Senate, so then it comes over to the House, and the House has to have at least one committee here, and so they've sent it back to Finance. So, but they mirrored what we had, so that should be relatively easy since we've already heard it and passed it as the Senate has. Then what's happening on Wednesday is the resources group has asked to use this room at this time to hear PPT, which is oil taxes. Now what we can do is not meet on Wednesday so that we can participate in those hearings since we're going to be getting that bill anyway. And perhaps that might be the wisest choice. Or the other option, of course, is we could meet in the morning, or we could meet in resources. We do have some bills scheduled just in case we decide to do that. There's an aggravated drunk driving, harassment, definition of child abuse and neglect. Our bills that I have just scheduled on Wednesday, just in case we do decide to meet. But like I said, resources has this room. Has asked for this room at this time, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week. So what I think we'll do, we'll just, on Tuesday, if indeed there's a bill dealing with PPP and oil taxes, we'll know on Tuesday, and then I think we can kind of decide from there where we as a committee wants to go. Because we do have a floor session on Tuesday, and we'll know then if the bills will go across.
Chris and Jill, question?
Okay. So with that, I think the best thing to do is just, since we're not meeting tomorrow and Monday's a holiday, just have a nice, long, restful weekend. Yes, Representative Finko?
Mr. Chairman, if you'd like an input on that resources, I think it would be nice, at least for the initial ones, if we sat in with them.
Sure.
If you're just looking for a feedback from that, so we could get kicked off with them.
I would tend to agree. I think that will help expedite when we actually get the bill from resources, and we've already heard some of the preliminary discussions. Because what the first 3 days is going to be the presentation by the administration, the governor's office, and of course we'll have that same presentation once we get the bill. But if we've already heard that, then perhaps we can skip those 2 or 3 days. And so that would be kind of my thought process too. Is that just since it's in our room, we'll be here anyway. We can just come here and we'll just meet with resources. And but there is a possibility too that. They have it listed as pending referral, so no bill comes about on Tuesday, or I guess it could still be right across on Wednesday. Then we'll just continue to meet here at normal time, and we'll take those bills I mentioned.
Does it have to for Wednesday? Could go to economic development and tourism, too.
What?
The bill?
Yes, but well, it could. I don't think it's going to.
Yeah. I just never presume it.
That's true. You never know. So, you know, that's why we'll have to just remain flexible, and we'll see where we're at on Tuesday. But definitely we'll have a meeting here Tuesday, a finance meeting at 1:30. Anything else? Not everybody have a long, safe, restful weekend. Adjourn.
Good.